Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by our supporting partners, NHI, RCARE, NRC Health, TSO Life, Erdman, and Sherpa. View more and check out all things Bridge the Gap on our new website, btgvoice.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast, the senior living podcast. You're here with Josh and Lucas. We are in San Diego. We are at the Super Bowl of conferences, the NIC conference in the spring, and we could not be more excited to have the godfather of NIC, the one and only Bob Kramer. Welcome, Bob.
It's good to be here. Thanks. Thanks for the opportunity, Lucas.
So excited, Bob. There, we could probably sit down, pick your brain for hours about the business, about your impact, your influence over it. I've been a huge admirer of you, your career, not only your career, but also you just as a man and a human being, and it's had a great impact on my life. And you may not know that actually Josh and I's friendship and the impetus of the podcast was really sparked by the NIC conference last year, right, Josh?
That's right. Actually, it was in Chicago. Uh-huh. I had been attending for years, and Lucas had as well. We had met earlier that summer and met in the lobby, actually, in Chicago of the conference. And that's when we started brainstorming. We said, how can we add this kind of value, what Lucas and I get to experience with a lot of other operators and partners? How can we share this with our listeners and bring thought leadership to the listeners? So you're exactly right. It's always been a focal point of my year to be at the NIC conference.
Bob, talk to us about the background and the history of NIC. What was the seed that started the inspiration to want to start NIC?
Well, it came back in 1991. There were four of us. Tony Mullen, a fellow based in Atlanta by the name of Bob Aramium, and another Atlanta native, Al Holbrook, and myself. And we had gotten to know each other in the 80s in the senior housing and care business. And we got together in the spring of 91. We were in the midst of a mild real estate recession at the time. And we said, this is an industry that's going to grow. There's no doubt about it because of demographics. But it has very poor access to capital. Most capital providers at that point, 1991, were either ignorant of the sector or very negative towards it because of bad experiences in the 80s with this sort of congregate care model, build it and they will come, and they didn't come. And so investors remembered that. Actually, Bob and Al had a regional conference in Atlanta, a Southeast Lenders Conference, where they had brought lenders together with operators, and they realized it was a good thing, and people had really enjoyed it. So we talked in D.C. in April of 91, what if we did this on a national level, and what if we had equity, not just debt? And so I'd put on conferences before, so I offered to put on the first one, and I went up to New York to interview for a week different debt and equity sources, and I asked them two questions. First one was, what would it take to get you to come to a conference on seniors housing? And the second question was, what would it take to get you to invest in seniors housing? And the answers have shaped the whole trajectory of NIC. The answer to the first question, they said, well, this is a niche alternative asset class for us. So we want what one guy called a business utilitarian conference. In other words, we're not coming to do golf and tennis and go to some resort. We want to be able, there was no Acela, we want big tech to settle down in the morning, meet with the C-suite of as many operating companies as possible, and have drinks with them at the end of the day and take the shuttle back. And we don't want a trade show, and we want an audience where we know everyone there is a provider at the C-suite level. And so we've always shaped our events to be business networking, deal-making events. We've never had a trade show. We charge a premium to vendors because it's really meant to be interaction between investors on the one hand and providers of housing and care on the other hand. So to the second question, they said, what would it take to get you to invest? They said data. Okay. And they said in particular, it's got to be time series data, not snapshot. And they said very significantly, and you can't be a trade association because we can never use your data as a basis for an investment thesis because You might have great research and great data, but as a trade association, you always have to say good things. You always have to say that everything's doing great, whether it is or not. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise your members are going to get very upset with you because they're paying dues for you to say everything's great. And so that was formative. It's why I started as a not-for-profit, because I believe, too, that people would be more willing to give us their data if we had a nonprofit mission oriented towards the good of the industry. And even ever since then, we've been really fortunate. We've been able to attract terrific volunteer leaders who really, yes, it's about business and about transactions, but it's also about feeling good at the end of the day that you're creating something that's meeting a real social need, and that you're, in essence, you're really doing well while doing good. And we've been able to attract leaders who have this motivation. They have a sense that they really want to leave the industry a better place, and that they see, and I see as a vehicle for that. So, but coming back, data has been key. If you look at NIC, our BHAG, to quote Jim Collins, was our big, hairy, audacious goal or idea, was we would hold a conference. We'd use, which would be a networking deal-making conference as well as educational. We'd use the proceeds to fund research, use the research to do definitive studies that would define these products. What is seniors housing? What is assisted living? What is independent living? What is memory care? So forth. And then over time, we would establish a database, a performance database of time series data, and use that performance database to ultimately attract institutional capital, lower cost capital, and pension funds, endowments, so on and so forth. And, you know, that was the plan in 91. We didn't have enough money to do our own research till 96. Then we'd put more than $1 million a year into research studies. We started to collect national data in 99, and then 2004, we started the MAP data service. And with the idea, ultimately, we knew we had to provide data at the local market level, that was critical. And with that, too, there's always the sense of you want to not only have data, but you want to be able to help folks. What does the data mean? What do I do with the data? And you want to help people. We like to think of NIC conferences like this one as places where people come to not only get a pulse of where the sector is, but a sense of where it's going, and therefore where they need to go. And certainly this conference today about investing in the integration of seniors housing and healthcare is very much about where we see the industry going. Because we think, you know, on any given day, we are home to 2.5 to 3 million frail elders, most of whom have multiple chronic conditions and functional limitations. What that also means is they're the high-need, high-cost, high-risk folks in our healthcare system. You know, they are the 10% of Medicare beneficiaries who account for 60% of the Medicare costs. So we believe we can play a huge role as we put more focus on management of chronic conditions, as we put more focus on prevention, on keeping people out of the hospital, out of the emergency room. We believe the seniors housing setting has enormous potential as we look at the shift in healthcare to value-driven and outcomes-driven, both payment and delivery models. So in that sense, we want our conferences, as I said, it's both the pulse through our data of where the industry is now, but it's also what are the signals about where it's going.
Mm. Gotcha.
Yeah, so Bob founded in 1991, mm-hmm. roughly 28 years later. It sounds from hearing how this all started, what we see, you guys have stayed pretty core to the mission, but the industry's changed a lot. What's been most significant about changes here at NIC that you guys have used with technology, adaptation? What are you guys doing a lot differently that you did maybe a little different in the beginning?
Well, first of all, I think the industry has changed and has become a more sophisticated industry. Mm-hmm. It's had to. Operators are much more sophisticated. They use data now. They didn't use data before. Mm-hmm. I mean, to their credit, a lot of the sort of founding giants in our industry, you think of Bill Coulson with Holiday Retirement, with an independent living sort of middle market product. You think of Paul Klassen and Karen Brown Wilson in assisted living. You think of John Erickson in CCRCs. You know, they didn't have tons of data.
Sure.
They had, in some senses, a sense of, I can do better than what I see out there. In some instances, they literally were looking for parents or in-laws, and they were entrepreneurs.
Sure.
And they said, I think I can create something better. And they went out and did it. But now we're in a situation where, as I said, operators, I think, are far more sophisticated with their systems. And we have much more diversity of product. That said, where we'll be 15 years from now, we'll look back on 2019 in 2035, and we will look back on the product diversity today, and it'll look like boring uniformity. And we will look back at the level of employment of technology and use of data and think, boy, we were in the prehistoric era in 2019. So that is really, really going to change our future. We've made enormous progress, but again, that sort of that speed of change is just ramping up enormously. And I think that's both exciting, but it's also, I think, scary and even threatening to a number of operators to make that adjustment, to sort of do business and meet the demands of the boomer consumer that we'll be addressing in the future.
Well, now, you touched on technology. I know Lucas and I were talking a little bit about this before. We want to pick your brain on some on that, but I also want you guys to talk a little bit. So Lucas has a little bit of the insider's game here and is on something that he refers to as the Future Leaders Council. That is personally very exciting to me because it seems like through the years, although I don't fully understand that, I'd like for you guys to maybe flesh that out of what the purpose of that group is. But it's been very exciting to me. I've gotten to know some of the most energetic, exciting, thought-provoking young leaders that have all been members of that group. And we've had several of them on our podcast. So could we take a step back and just talk a little bit about when that group was formed, kind of what the mission of that is and the vision for that group?
Sure. Well, it's excited. Lucas is a member of the FLC, the current FLC. You really can look at it from two perspectives. Looked at very selfishly, the FLC was started because of a recognition that the products that will serve boomers are not going to be products that will be developed, financed, conceived, marketed by the current leaders of the last 20, 25 years in the industry. There's going to be a new generation that's going to deliver that product, and they will think differently. At the same time, selfishly for NIC, I was concerned. We have, as I said earlier, we've been incredibly blessed to have really great volunteer leaders who have given enormous time and really engaged in NIC in a way that you wouldn't expect CEOs to give that much time to a volunteer organization. They're not just sort of paying their dues so they can say, I've got this board membership. It's roll up your sleeves. It's, you know, basically every one of our initiatives that we've had since the beginning, we've usually had at least one, usually two board members that have sort of been the champions of that. And that's made an enormous difference in the acceptance within the broader industry that these volunteer leaders so believe in it that they will invest on their own time in it. So, but I looked around in 2008 and said, where is that next generation of board members for NIC going to come from? I've been incredibly blessed to just work with people I had enormous, enormous respect for. Bill Shine, Arnie Whitman, Al Holbrook, who I mentioned, Tilo Best, Ray Lewis, Ray Braun, Kathy Sweeney. I mean, it's just Kevin McMean. I could just go down the list of people who have just given so much time and effort to make NIC the organization it is. So I went and I asked each of the former chairs, how will we, you know, where are we going to find the leaders like you for the next 20, 30 years of NIC. And the idea actually came from Ray Lewis, one of our former chairs. And it was really his idea that we should create a future leaders council. And so the idea is to, it was also, though, recognizing when we started it, we did it to say thank you to the companies that had put in so many volunteer hours. So we wanted to invest in their rising stars just as they had invested at the C-suite level in us.
Makes sense.
So it was really a thank you to them. So, but it has become very competitive. You know, we take approximately 8 folks a year. We make a 3-year commitment to them. They're part of the FLC. There's a class, and so we elect a class of of 8 each year. And but the idea is that they'll learn about NIC. They'll serve on different boards and committees. And they'll really get to understand the organization. So ultimately, we're investing for 10 to 15 years from now. Because in 10 to 15 years, we expect these folks to be leaders of the industry and of NIC. But we're making an investment so that they understand. I mean, because NIC is kind of different. You know, we're not a trade association. We don't have members. We're a 501c3. You know, we take our mission seriously. Well, what does all that mean? Well, it means, for instance, we don't look for board members that see the whole reason to get on the board in order to expand their network so they can do more deals. And if all you're doing is chasing deals, you don't really belong in the NIC board. Yes, we have a transactional deal-oriented event, no question. But it's more than that. And we look for people who understand the more than that. But we want to then, with the FLC, create this network. And it also was a realization, we need a broader volunteer base. Now, when you look at, for instance, our whole university initiative and our internship initiative, that's all driven by the FLC. They started it. You look at now our boot camp, the idea of having a practical hands-on day where you can go to 1,000 seminars and conferences on sort of that say the water's fine, come on into seniors housing. What we wanted was something more tangible, where people really learned how to assess a deal. They learned how to underwrite. In the future, for instance, they will learn, what does it mean? How do you underwrite the healthcare component of seniors housing? And how and why does that add value? So the boot camp has been staffed, developed, and put together and put on by FLC and graduates, what we call, because you're always, in one sense, an FLC member.
Sure.
Because now, this is our 10th year. So now we have 10 years of alumni, which is really exciting.
It's very impressive group. It excites me for the, and it's very encouraging for the future of NIC, for the future of our industry. And I have firsthand witnessed that group over the last few years, very influential at also attracting talent that's not currently in our industry, which is really encouraging, and I know a huge need.
That is a key area, and that is since the FLC represents people who are earlier in their careers, just put simply, it's far more effective to have someone who's 33 go to a university and say, here's why I'm excited to be in this industry, and here's why I think you ought to consider it as a career, versus to have me, we won't give my age, but a little bit older, more than twice that age, go in and say, hey, this is a great field. And so to me, and part of the idea is that all the FLC members and alums will all adopt or own schools, either where they went or a university or college where they're based in
and
terms
Bob,
of their company.
If we could clone you and put you into every university, we would blow the doors off the internship program. I guarantee you'd run circles around any 33-year-old. But I'm going to use this as a leverage point to then move on. You're very collaborative. I noticed that you're also going to be speaking at Senior Living Innovation Forum. There's a big word that continues to come up, and I've heard you talk about it, and it's disruption. And one of the phrases that you've mentioned over time is that, and I hope I get this right, that we overestimate the amount of disruption that would happen within 2 years, but we underestimate it within 10 years.
I'm borrowing a quote from Bill Gates.
Okay.
And Bill Gates said, when talking about change. He said, we overestimate the change that will happen in the next 2 years, and then we underestimate the change that will happen in the next 10. And I love that quote because I think we're entering what I see it to be, what I call the disruptive decade. Disrupted decade for our sector because of the changing customer, among other things. But also it's a disruptive decade in healthcare, in post-acute care, in long-term care, as well as seniors housing and care. And so in entering that decade, it's important to realize change isn't going to happen overnight. And so this is a sort of, that first part of the Gates quote is, for people to say the sky is falling, you got to change right away. For instance, people have been saying the boomers are coming ever since I've been in this industry. And the reality is the boomers are still not yet primarily our customer, except as they are decision makers for their parents. But we will start serving the boomers as our customer in about 10 years. So if you're designing, for instance, a community now, you've got to be thinking about the life of that community. If you're private equity you've got to be thinking, you know, what's, in terms of my exit strategy, what kind of appeal is this property going to have in 2026? And so, you know, I think that I like to use the phrase of Clay Christensen, who's kind of the modern sort of father of or leading thinker in innovation. And he distinguishes between continuous innovation and disruptive innovation. One is not good and one bad. Continuous innovation is what every business should always be doing, every individual. It's, you want to do the things you've been doing better. You want to sell better. You want to take care of your customers better. All of those things. But it's doing things better. Disruptive innovation is doing them completely differently. It's a completely different way of thinking about how to meet the needs of your customer. And I think we're entering such a period. And I think that's really exciting. It'll also be unsettling because some people who are so used to sort of doing the same old, they're going to find themselves marginalized and out of business. At the same time, there are going to be huge opportunities in this time of disruption. But as I like to say, in a period of disruptive innovation, you want to be the disruptor, not the disrupted, because the disrupted in business usually go out of business. Sure. So hence our push on this whole area of the increasing role of an integration of healthcare and seniors housing, because we think that if you're going to be competitive 5 years from now and you're going to be home to frail elders, you're going to be a center for coordinating their chronic disease management, for coordinating in a preventive way and a chronic disease management way their health care. And if you're not, you're not going to be a preferred provider. And you're going to struggle. You're going to struggle to get residents.
Yeah. Well, and I know this is something that Josh and I talk about so often. I wish we had more time, but we have one last question. I want to dive into technology here. Josh and I were talking earlier. My question for you, Bob, is will technology combat or foster isolation in aging adults?
Technology is a means to an end. It's not the end itself. It's not the solution. But technology will, for instance, technology well applied will enable us to make better use of staff, to have staff work to the limits of their license. In other words, to have more actual personal meaningful interaction between staff and residents rather than form checking or checking to see if somebody needs to be changed or whatever. And so I think, but technology more broadly, I think if you think of the exploding power of the computing power of the smartphone, and you couple that with sensors, and then you couple that with artificial intelligence, and you couple that with predictive analytics, just those four things, you have the ability to personalize healthcare, to personalize elder care, and ultimately to create personalized aging plans in a very exciting way. And I think the most important thing about technology in the senior care space is get your frontline staff on board. Mm. No, it's most important that they see the value of how it's going to help them do their job better and be and feel better about their job and more proud. If that happens, the technology will truly be adopted. If it doesn't, they will undermine. They will totally block it. But the second thing is that, you know, technology, as I said, it'll enable better utilization of staff. Technology is critical. We are increasingly in a data world. And so technology means having not only having data on performance, but it also means shareable data, real-time shareable data with all the partners that you're going to have, payers, providers, so forth. And ultimately, it also means technology can create wonderful opportunities for more interaction between residents and staff and residents and family. Just look at Alexa and other voice-first technology. But I think that the thing is, we've got to use it again as a means to an end, not the end. Because no one wants a brave new world where people are in their, you know, 200-foot cubicles with a screen and their human contact is turning the screen on. And their ability to get out is all virtual. So that it has to enhance human touch. So we have to have both high tech and high touch. Mm. If we use the high tech instead of the high touch, we will fail. And we'll ultimately have an epidemic of shut-ins and loneliness rather than using technology to truly help solve the workforce crisis that we have. It's a part of the solution. You look at Japan. They're aging faster than we are. They don't have some of the pluses we have. They have net out migration. They have a birth rate that makes ours look robust. But they're really focused on technology and on repositioning their elder workforce to care for those even older.
Interesting.
Using folks 55 to 80 to care for those 80 to 120. I think we will see that also in the future. I think we'll see residents in senior communities in the future who will be helping in differing ways residents that are not able to, that need more help.
Interesting. Fascinating. So high touch and the high technology. I love that. High tech and high touch. That's awesome. Well, thanks for being with us today, Bob. I know that it's a busy week ahead. We're excited to be here at the NIC conference. Excited that Lucas is able to serve on the Future Leaders Council. Excited to be part of this.
Well, I just want to thank you all for what you're doing through the podcast and just getting the word out. I mean, it's the opportunities in our field are so huge today, but there are opportunities that will reward people that want to do the right thing for the right reason and who also realize in a time of change, just doing the same old thing the same old way isn't going to work. We're going to have a very different customer, exploding technology, the radical changes in our healthcare delivery and payment system. And all of that are going to create dislocation and enormous opportunity.
It's exciting times.
Exciting times, and what a value back to our audience. This has been an excellent show. There's going to be ways that we connect with both Bob and the NIC conference in the show notes. The NIC conference has a robust thought leadership platform with a ton of content that comes out from these biannual events, both in the spring and in the fall, and we encourage you to take a look into it and see if it's something that you'd like to come out and participate in. And thank you each and everyone for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
Next up for the BTG podcast team is Senior Living 100 Conference in March. We have an exciting lineup of guests covering a variety of topics. To learn more about this exclusive leadership conference, visit the tour page at btgvoice.com.